Welcome back. What a weekend we could have in terms of driver championships and team championships awarded as well. So with Formula E, NASCAR, IndyCar all wrapped up, Formula One still has technically four races to go, including this weekend, but their Constructors' Championship already decided. Mercedes won that 2 weeks ago at Imola, and Lewis Hamilton could very well wrap up his seventh and record-tying Drivers' World Championship this weekend, is simply in one of two ways. Either finish ahead of Valtteri Bottas. I mean, if he finishes anywhere, whether it's first, second, sixth, seventh, 12th, 13th, doesn't matter. As long as Hamilton finishes in front of Bottas, he wins the Drivers' Championship. And Bottas, if he wants to keep this championship fight going to Bahrain, he has to outscore Lewis Hamilton by at least 8 points. So essentially, Lewis Hamilton's going to win his world championship this weekend. Because as much as I want Bottas to be competitive, I would like to think that Mercedes is backing him and not favoring Lewis Hamilton, although I cannot be sure about that. It's probably not going to happen this weekend. He's probably not going to be able to beat Lewis the way he would need to keep this title fight going to Bahrain. And that's a bummer. I mean, in this Mercedes domination period, it came down really to Hamilton's teammate. Because in 14 and 16, Rosberg was able to push him. Hamilton still won it in 14, but Rosberg able to win it in 2016. I mean, if Rosberg doesn't beat Hamilton in 2016, essentially Lewis is winning the championship from 2014 to now. So he could very well, could have been winning his eighth world championship this weekend. But because Nico Rosberg was able to slip one in there in 2016, Hamilton's, all this success was just pushed off by a year, essentially. But Valtteri Bottas has not been able to do that. And even when he was in second place with, in relative striking distance, I want to say 2018 was something that really stood out to me because Bottas was competitive against Hamilton. And we got to the Russian Grand Prix when Bottas was a championship competitor. He was in that championship fight. Not as much as Sebastian Vettel was, though. So even though Bottas could have fought Hamilton, could have fought Vettel, Mercedes told Bottas to get over and allow Hamilton to come through. And really, ever since that 2018 Russian Grand Prix, I have not been sold on Mercedes really backing Valtteri Bottas. And I know that, technically, Bottas is on contract for next season right now and Hamilton isn't. But still, I just don't get the feeling that when it's Hamilton and Bottas there at Mercedes, that both drivers are being supported equally. And I can understand that with Hamilton having the success that he had had for that team before Valtteri came in. But, I mean, essentially, you got to give both drivers a chance. At least I would hope they would. But Mercedes looks to hold on to their dominance. They have gotten every single pole position this year. Valtteri's got four in the Austrian Grand Prix, the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, at the Eiffel Grand Prix and Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. The other nine have been captured by Lewis Hamilton this season. So Mercedes has dominated in terms of pole position. They've gotten all but, four fastest laps of the season. And they've won almost every, they've won all but two races. Max Verstappen was able to get a win in the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, and then Pierre Gasly won in Italy. Otherwise, it's been all Mercedes. So, I mean, it's hasn't been the most exhilarating period in Formula One, so that's why you would hope that teammates would be allowed to battle, but nonetheless, Valtteri will have to fight his heart out this weekend and the coming weekends if he wants to try to keep this championship battle going throughout the rest of the season. But I have a feeling in my gut that Lewis Hamilton's winning his seventh world championship this weekend. But we'll see. This is the final race in Europe for the year. After this, they will go to Bahrain for two races. They'll race on the traditional international circuit that they typically race on when they go there. And then they'll have the Sakhir Grand Prix, which will take place. And, of course, the Bahrain International Circuit is located in Sakhir, Bahrain. So just like they did with Austria, having the Austrian Grand Prix, then the Styrian Grand Prix was at the same exact circuit. At least this time, we get two different circuit layouts. So you have the Bahrain Grand Prix, which is the race coming up after this weekend's Turkish Grand Prix, and that'll be on the typical international circuit that they normally use. Then that Sakhir Grand Prix, that's the one where they're going to try that outer loop circuit. So essentially the home straight, the pit straight, and the two long straightaways that you turn into coming off pit lane and turn off to come onto the pit straight or start-finish straight. Those two essentially, those three parts essentially stay there, but the entire infield section is ignored on that layout. And essentially, you just come through the first couple turns, you go down that long straightaway right as you turn off the start-finish straight, and then instead of turning sharply into that infield section, they just kind of take a slight right-hander and just go just around this little outline of a outer circle, just a couple of chicanes, a couple of little slight turns here and there, and they're right back on to that big long stretch that leads you back to the start finish straight. So it's going to be really interesting to see, because it's essentially as close to an oval race as Formula One will ever get. You look back at the old Hockenheimring, it was kind of the same thing. It was a big loop with a couple chicanes here and then a little stadium section. This one is going to be as close to an oval race as you will ever see Formula One compete on. I'm actually kind of intrigued to see how it goes. Then, of course, the season will end in Abu Dhabi. But those are the four races left. They'll be in Turkey this weekend. Some interesting practice times. Max Verstappen at the top of the timing sheet in both of the two practice sessions that happened earlier today. So we'll see. Mercedes was really off in the first practice session. They were back to kind of their normal spots there in the second practice session, although still Verstappen top of the timing sheet. So we'll see if Red Bull can possibly just show a little bit of fight against Mercedes this weekend there in Turkey. Maybe the fight that we were hoping we would have seen all season that we haven't really. But it should be fun. The Turkish Grand Prix, it's a fun circuit. That just ridiculous turn eight, that's really like four different turns in one. It's always fun to see a Formula One car rip through there with its speed and its downforce. It's just ridiculous. And then, of course, some fun moments there in Turkey. The Grand Prix that stands out the most to me, 2010, when you had Hamilton and Jenson Button at the time both driving for McLaren, battling it out for the lead after the two Red Bull drivers at the time, which was Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber, crashed into each other on one of the straightaways. It took Vettel completely out of the race. Webber had to box, lost the any kind of contention for the win there. And then I believe Hamilton went on to win that race. Yeah, I don't think Jenson Button went on to win there. I think it was Lewis Hamilton that won in Turkey that year in 2010. But that was the Grand Prix that stuck out the most to me. I think the last time they were in Turkey was 2011, I want to say, 2011 or 12. So it's been a while since they've been back to this circuit. Not a whole lot of drivers have had experience on this circuit. So it should be a lot of fun to see. You know, I enjoyed the racing back in Germany. So maybe, we can enjoy another racing at a circuit that used to be a big part of the calendar and now is not. But looking forward to the Turkish Grand Prix this weekend, especially again with some of the times that we saw in the second practice when Mercedes was a little more on their game. Those times kind of excite me for the race that we could see this weekend there in Turkey. So for Formula One, the Constructors' Championship locked up. The Drivers' Championship could be locked up and, in my opinion, probably will be locked up this weekend with Lewis Hamilton winning the championship there. But that's not the only championship up for grabs. The two major sports car series, the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Series here in the United States and then the FIA's World Endurance Championships that happen over in Europe, both of those leagues are having their final race of the season this weekend. So IMSA, with their famed 12 hours of Sebring, they're at the Sebring International Raceway in Florida. That goes down this weekend, or it starts tomorrow, I believe. It starts in Sunday morning, goes to Sunday afternoon. So it's 12 hours, but they still manage to to get in there in one day. But looking forward to that this weekend, and still have a fair amount of titles up for grabs. So the GT Le Mans and the Le Mans Prototype 2 champions were decided back in Monterey when they had the Monterey Sports Car Championship at WeatherTech Raceway. So those two championships were decided in the Le Mans Prototype 2 class. The driver's champion, Patrick Kelly of the United States, is the winner there in terms of the driver. And then in terms of the team that won, the number 52 PR1 Matheson Motorsport team took the team championship. And then there is only one manufacturer that takes part in the IMSA WeatherTech Series in the LMP2 class, which is the Oreca manufacturer. So there is no manufacturer's championship for the LMP2 class, since there's only one manufacturer that that helps construct those cars. But the G1's class, which is the third essentially class of the four, they also had their championships decided 2 weeks ago. Antonio Garcia, the Spaniard, and Jordan Taylor, the American, bringing home the drivers' championships in the GT Le Mans series. In terms of the team championship, number 3 Corvette Race, that was the team that won the GT Le Mans team championship. And then in terms of the GT Le Mans manufacturers championship, Chevrolet wins there with 350 or 336 points as of right now. We'll see how many points they get in Sebring, but they have already locked up the manufacturer's championship there for GT Le Mans. But what that means essentially is there's still 6 championships to be decided this weekend for IMSA, and that is the driver, team, and manufacturer's championship for both the Daytona prototypes, which is the top class in the series, and the Grand Touring Daytona class, which is essentially the bottom class, the slowest class, but it's oftentimes the one that gives you the most kind of exciting racing, in my opinion. But all 6 or the 3 championships in each of those classes still up for grabs. The Daytona prototypes, Helio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor lead the team of Ryan Briscoe and Ranger Van Der Zand by just 2 points heading into this championship fight. And also there in third place, Pipo Derini also with a chance to maybe throw his hat into that championship fight there. But definitely the battle between the teams of Helio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor against Ryan Briscoe and Ranger Van Der Zand, I mean, it's been a heck of a battle all season long. Cannot wait to see how that is decided this weekend in Sebring. And in terms of the Grand Touring Daytona class, you have Mario Farnbacher and Matt McMurray sitting in first place with a slight lead over Aaron Tellett, who sits by himself there in second with 248. But 10 points separate first and second there for the Drivers' Championship in the GT Daytona class. So that could also be a very fun end to the season for those competitors. And then in terms of the team standings, really a battle between 3 teams here going into the final race. The number 7 Acura team Penske car currently in first. And you have the number 10 Konica Minolta Cadillac team and the number 31 Whelan Engineering Racing, all separated by just 9 points there in the team standings for the Daytona prototype. So it should be a fun clash there at the end of the season for them. Then the GT Daytona class, again, a pretty close top 3 there, separated by just 12 points. The number 86, the Meyer Shank Racing, is in first right now, leading the number 16, Wright Motorsports, and the 14, AIM Vassar Sullivan in the third spot for GT Daytona. So again, the team battle there could be very interesting. And then the 3 manufacturers for the Daytona prototypes, it's down to a 2-team battle there between Acura and Cadillac. Just 1 point separates the 2 teams there in the manufacturer standings for the Daytona prototypes. And then in terms of the GT Daytona championship, it's a battle between 2 Japanese manufacturers of Lexus and Acura. So it should be a fun end to the year for both of those classes and all of the championship fights that still have yet to be decided. And then in terms of the WEC, the World Endurance Championship, they also have their final weekend of racing. They have the 8 hours of Bahrain that happens, early Sunday morning for us. It goes I believe from, I think, 3 a.m. Our time until 11 a.m. our time Sunday morning. So if you want to get up and watch it, feel free. But the WEC also having numerous titles left up for grabs, including the because in for the WEC it goes LMP1, LMP2. So both the WEC and IMSA share that LMP2 class, but the top class is different. So the Le Mans Prototype 1s, the Drivers' Championship for that has yet to be decided. The GT Pro class Drivers' Championship is yet to be decided. And then the Team and Driver Championship for GT Amateur is yet to be decided as well. So a lot of titles could be decided, will be. I mean, in terms of the sports car championships, all those titles will be decided this weekend. And then we'll see if Formula One hands out or crowns their final champion of the season. But a lot of gold could be handed out this weekend for auto racing, which is kind of the last big hurrah weekend for auto racing for the remainder of this year. After this weekend, we just have three races left really in Formula One before we get psyched for the 2021 calendar. But looking forward to all of that racing action this weekend. Looking forward to Turkey. Hopefully, you know, we can get a little bit of drama to that Turkish Grand Prix. But when we come back, we'll take a look at the Wolfpack's next matchup happening this weekend, going up against New Mexico. And then we'll take a look at the rest of the Mountain West scoreboard. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. We get set for another week of Mountain West football. And it actually kicked off last night with Boise State and Colorado State doing battle there on the Smurf Turf. And Boise State bounced back from their blowout loss to BYU to blow out Colorado State. Boise State won 52-21. And talk about, I mean, we had a blocked kick last night in the Thursday night football game, right? The blocked punt that went for a touchdown. So it was just happened to be a night for blocked kicks, because Boise State had at least, I think, three of them. They had their first score of the game off of a blocked punt that made it 7-0. Then later on in the first quarter, they had a 91-yard return of a blocked field goal for a touchdown that then made it 21 to nothing Boise State. And then in the second quarter as well, they had a 20-yard return of another blocked punt that made it 42-7 Boise State. And then there was a fumble recovery there late in the third quarter as well that Boise State recovered to score another touchdown to make it 52-21, which was the final score of the game. So Boise State blocking three kicks last night and pretty much scoring off all of them. So it was just a night for blocked kicks in football games. But Boise State able to bounce back there against Colorado State and get to 3-1 on the year, 3-0 in the Mountain West. Colorado State now 1-2 overall and 1-2 in conference play. And we did have one game canceled on the Mountain West scoreboard. That was Air Force at Wyoming. That game will not take place this weekend, but we still have four games going on the Mountain West schedule. Fresno State 2-1. Overall and 2-1 in conference, go on the road against the winless Utah State team at 0-3 overall and in conference, coming off that beatdown they received from Nevada. Then you have the 2-1 Hawaii squad going on the road against 2-1 San Diego State. And then you have UNLV at 0-3 going on the road to take on the 3-0 San Jose State Spartans. So those are the other games happening around the Mountain West. And then, of course, the 3-0 Nevada Wolfpack going up against the 0-2 New Mexico Lobos. This should be an interesting game. Nevada currently favored by 17.5 points in this game. This taking place in Las Vegas. Mexico not allowed to host games not allowed to host games there in their state. So they're playing this game in Las Vegas. And, I mean, New Mexico 0-2, but they have been able to score in their two games. I mean, the two games that they've had this season, they've scored a handful of points, losing 38-21 to San Jose State, but then losing 39-33 to Hawaii. So they have been able to put points on the board, but I believe their starting quarterback, their typical starting quarterback, is out for this game. So that could be a huge advantage there for the Wolfpack in terms of their defense, which has looked solid all season long, really. Except for kind of that the rougher stretch there of the Wyoming game. But really, since besides that, this defense and this team, the last two games have been just downright diabolical. It's been so much fun to watch this Nevada team this year. And be fun to see how Carson Strong continues to develop himself this season. He's looked so strong already, 96 for 131 on the year. He's got a 1,181 yards and 9 touchdowns this season, and still no interceptions on the year either. So he has done a fantastic job of quarterbacking for this team. Toa Taua as well on the ground has had some bruising runs. And then, of course, Romeo Dubs. What can you say about the strong Dubs connection that Nevada has had through these first three games of the season? It's just been ridiculous how talented those two kids are and what they've been able to do this year for Nevada, and can't wait to see what they can do against New Mexico, a team that's 0-2, but you just never know, you know, what you're going to get in college football. Again, it's a team that's shown they can put up points. We'll see if their backup quarterback shares that capability, but definitely should be fun to watch this game between Nevada and New Mexico. And again, Nevada, 36 points per game. This is a team that has had a lot of consistency in terms of scoring. I mean, if you look at their three games so far in terms of offensive output, 37 against Wyoming, 37 against UNLV, 34 against Utah State. So when you have an offense that can put up some solid points and do it consistently, it just makes you that much more of a dangerous team. So looking forward to what this game can bring, especially with, you know, how close this series has been overall. These two teams have had 7 total meetings. Eight total meetings. Nevada's won 4 of them. New Mexico's won 3, and there's been 1 tie. But if you look at the last 5 games, Nevada has won 4 of them. And they've won them by some relatively hefty margins at times. 49-7 back in 2011, 31-24 then in 2012. They won 35-17 in 2015, and they beat New Mexico 21-10 last year here in Reno. So this is a team that Nevada's had some success against. I mean, winning in 2019 and then winning 2011, 12, and 15 as well. So Nevada has some good history against New Mexico, and I think with the way this Nevada team has played, this is a team that just looks on a different level than they were last year. And obviously with some, you know, the maturity of Carson Strong from freshman to sophomore, and just the continuation of developing talent for guys like Romeo Dubs and like Toa Taua, I mean, it's just been a really, really fun team to watch this year. And we'll see if they can keep pace. I mean, right now, the battle for the Mountain West is Nevada and San Jose State. Those two teams, 3-0 right now, the only two undefeated teams left. In the Mountain West in terms of overall record, Boise State has a loss, but they are technically 3-0 in the Mountain West. So they have not lost Boise State a conference game yet. But in terms of overall undefeated, Nevada and San Jose State, the last two undefeated teams there in the Mountain West in terms of overall record. But should be a fun week of football. Again, it's good to see that most of these games are scheduled to be played. Obviously, the Pac-12 losing the Cal Arizona State game this week due to the fact that Herm Edwards, the head coach of Arizona State, tested positive for COVID-19. The Utah UCLA game has been canceled this weekend as well. So I'm imagine that Utah and Cal are probably just sitting there going, man, it'd be nice to actually play one of these scheduled games. They've now had both of their games so far this season canceled, but you know, it's with all that going on, obviously the SEC with their problems that they've been having. I mean, really, there's a lot of all the major conferences are dealing with this now, and just thankful that the Mountain West has, you know, in the first few weeks of their season, has been able to avoid any games getting canceled. Hopefully, I didn't just jinx it. But hopefully, you know, they continue to go through this season, get these games in. We can continue to enjoy some West Coast football because even though we won't have those two games there in the Pac-12, still some fun matchups left for them as well in terms of West Coast football. Number 11, Oregon and Washington State doing battle at 4 o'clock tomorrow. You have USC, who came off just that unbelievable comeback there against Arizona State last week to get the 28-27 win. They now play the University of Arizona this week on the road. Arizona having their first game of the season. Colorado and Stanford. Colorado looked pretty sharp against UCLA last weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how they now perform in week two. Welcome back inside the studio. It is Friday, and it's the second hour of Friday, which means our pal, the Sax Man, Rick Metz, is here.
Sax Man is in the house, baby. The Sax Man cometh.
How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Spooky.
I made a little joke at the beginning of the show that typically these are the days that scare us, but what can Friday the 13th throw at us at the entire year of 2020?
It's 2020.
Already?
I mean, you know, yeah. Friday the 13th is just another little addendum
to the whole
year
has been a Friday the 13th.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm telling you, man. Well, I'm glad we're both healthy and we're both rocking and we're talking sports.
Absolutely.
Let's talk some sports. Unfortunately, I have a couple of sad notes that I want to start with.
Yep.
We got to start with the NBA. Tommy Heinsohn has left us at the tender age of 86. One of the greatest figures in Celtics basketball of all time. He was with the team for six decades as a player, a coach, and a broadcaster. He played for the Celtics from 56 to 65, coached the team from 69 to 78, and then spent over 30 years as the color commentator for their local broadcast along play-by-play commentator Mike Gorman. And he's been regarded as one of the most iconic and charismatic Celtics figures throughout the franchise history. He's always been known for his loyalty to the team and its traditions. Tommy Heinsohn was quite the ambassador for the Boston Celtics. He was elected to the Hall of Fame, the NBA Hall of Fame, for his contributions as a player. And he was also inducted into the Hall of Fame for his success as a head coach.
Yeah.
He's been inducted twice as, you know, both a player and a head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he also helped form the NBA Players Association, in case you weren't aware of that.
Oh, that I did not know.
Yeah, he's one of the founding fathers of the NBA Players Association. And he has the distinction of being the only person being involved in official team capacity in each of the Celtics' 17 championships, as well as each of their 21 NBA Finals appearances.
That's crazy.
17-4 in the NBA Finals, the Celtics are.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do is say one name and you know exactly how great they are. Bill Russell.
Yes.
You know, I mean, goodness, nobody will ever approach Bill Russell.
That they will
not. Was just absolutely amazing. And Tommy Heinsohn, let me give you a little background on Tommy. He was born in Jersey City, New Jersey. Hey, the New York in me comes out, you know. He was the all-time leading scorer at Holy Cross in Worcester, Mass.
Okay.
Yep, he led the school all-time leading scorer with 1,789 points, an average of 22.1 points per game.
Whoa.
That's big. During his senior year, he scored a school record 51 points in a game against Boston College. He averaged 27.4 points per game that season and 21.1 rebounds per game for that season.
Whoa.
I mean, a 20-20 in scoring. Yeah. And rebounds in the senior year of college. I mean, oh my goodness. You know?
That's a way to stand out.
Oh, yeah, definitely so. When he hit the Celtics in 1956, he played in the NBA All-Star Game. He was named as the NBA Rookie of the Year over teammate Bill Russell.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. He won his first championship ring that year as a rookie. He was part of the Celtics that won eight NBA titles in 9 years, including seven in a row between 59 and 65. You know, and check this out. In NBA history, only his teammates Bill Russell and Sam Jones won more championship rings during their playing careers. And Heinsohn's streak of going to the NBA Finals each season of his 9-year career is by far the longest in the history of the league.
Crazy.
Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy.
Now, during his career, he was also named to 6 All-Star teams. On the day, his teammate and fellow Holy Cross Crusader, Bob Cousy, another Celtics legend, retired. Heinsohn scored his 10,000th career point. His number was retired. Number 15 was retired by the Celtics in 1965.
Very cool.
We just got to say, rest in peace.
Yes.
To the great Tommy Heinsohn.
Indeed.
Now, on to another sad note. Let's move over to the NFL. Just found out today, the Golden Boy will no longer shine.
Yes.
The great Paul Hornung from the Green Bay Packers. Unfortunately, the second classic legendary Green Bay Packers player to pass away in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Paul Hornung just passed away. He was nicknamed the Golden Boy, of course. Paul Hornung had quite the stellar career, both on and off the field. Paul Hornung was the bad boy, one of the original bad boys of the National Football League. Elected to the Hall of Fame, and he played for the Packers from 1956. He played on the teams that won 4 NFL titles and the very first Super Bowl. He's the first Heisman Trophy winner to do all of the following. Check this out. Play pro football, be selected as the first overall selection in the NFL draft, win the NFL Most Valuable Player Award, and be inducted into the both professional and college football Hall of Fames.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice resume. You
know, that's a heck of a resume. Now, a lot of people don't know, besides being a great halfback, he also played quarterback, and he was the team's place kicker.
Oh, there you go.
Yep, he held multiple positions. He wore a lot of hats. He went to Notre Dame, you know, and he played basketball when he was at Notre Dame as well as football. He was from Louisville, Kentucky, and he was recruited, of course, by the legendary Bear Bryant in Kentucky, but he chose to attend Notre Dame instead. You know, he was a great player in college ball, and then he moved on after graduating from Notre Dame. He had a degree in business and selection overall in the 57 draft, okay? And he was the only Packer on the roster who actually didn't play in Super Bowl I.
Oh, interesting.
A pinched nerve kept him on the sidelines. Ooh. And he chose not to enter the game when he was asked to in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
I mean, a pinched nerve, that's a pretty bad injury there.
Yeah, and depending on where it is.
Yep, exactly. It doesn't say exactly. I didn't get any information on exactly where that pinched nerve was. But, he was the only guy on the roster that didn't play in the game, but he still got the ring, Let's see. Let's talk about a couple of things that he had going on in his career. He led the league in scoring for 3 straight seasons from 59 to 61.
Wow.
During the 1960 season, the last with just 12 games in the entire season, he set an all-time record by scoring 176 points.
Wow.
Remember, he was also, besides being a halfback, he was a place kicker.
Yeah.
So he got a bunch of extra points by doing that as well, by kicking extra points and field goals.
Mm-hmm.
He also passed for 2 additional touchdowns in that season, but that did not add to his point scoring total. For some reason, they didn't count it in for that season. I don't know why. Now, that record stood until the 2006 season, when one of your favorites, LT, LaDainian Tomlinson of the then San Diego Chargers, broke the record with 180 points by scoring his 30th touchdown on December 17th, leaving him with 4 points more than Hornung's record. Now, that was still in more games than it took Hornung to set that record.
That's true. You said it was a 12-game season where he did that, and
And LT did it in 14 games.
Gotcha.
Right. There were still 2 games left to play.
Okay, that's what you're saying.
He broke the record, Now, in 1961, Hornung also set the scoring record in an NFL championship game with 19 points. That record stood for 56 years until James White scored 20 points in Super Bowl 51. In Green Bay's 65 championship win, he rushed for 105 yards and a touchdown on a very, very muddy field against the Cleveland Browns, led by the amazing Automatic Otto Graham. Automatic Otto, still in my opinion, one of the top 5 quarterbacks of all time. In October of that same year, he set a record for most points in a calendar month with 77. And guess who broke that record? LT. He broke that record.
I was going to guess that.
I wish
that,
you folks would see Spencer right now. He's like, yeah, one of my Chargers broke that record.
I don't have a lot to celebrate about the Chargers this
especially
year.
So
I can,
here, yeah.
Yeah, I can celebrate some old-time
LT
glory.
Posted 78 points in November of 2006.
Oh, nice.
Horning won
very
most
nice.
Valuable player in 61, was chosen as an All-Pro twice, named to the Pro Bowl twice. He's one of only 9 players, like I said, to have won both the Heisman Trophy and the MVP for the NFL. He's the only one to ever make a 50-plus yard fair catch kick, which came in 1964 on September 13th at the end of the first half of the opener against rival and defending champions Chicago.
Ooh, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Horning had some amazing stuff going on. Now, he was definitely a bad boy off the field, too.
Yeah.
He had some issues. He was suspended for
Ooh.
A season. Yeah, for gambling, for betting on games.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, not legal back then.
Not legal back then either, that's for sure. You know, now I got to tell you, he was selected to in the expansion draft by the New Orleans Saints, who later traded for Horning's backfield mate at Green Bay, Jim Taylor. But Horning never suited up for the Saints. The neck injury forced him to retire during training camp. So
gotcha.
He never played with the Packers in Super Bowl II.
Wow.
Yeah. So now back in the day, Taylor and Horning, that amazing pair for the Green Bay Packers, known as Thunder and Lightning. He holds the record for most games with 30-plus points, 2. The most games with 25-plus points, 3. And the most games with 13 points in a season, 8 games he did that in 1960. He also holds the dubious distinction of having missed an NFL record 26 field goals in a season in 1964.
Yeah,
yeah,
those kicking woes,
they can
come
happen,
around to
they
bite
happen
you.
All the greats as well, you know. So, but rest in peace. The
yes.
Golden Boy shines no longer. Paul Harning has left us.
Yes, rest in peace.
A couple of tidbits from this last weekend of football, although last night's game was interesting.
It was fun.
It was definitely a lot
it was
of fun.
Fun.
It wasn't as fun for the Titans as it was for the Colts.
That's true.
They'll be meeting up again in 2 weeks for, you know, probably the leader to figure out who's going to be the leader of the AFC South.
Yeah, we could see another lead change going into the home stretch.
But they both have interesting games coming up this weekend, which will determine their position when they meet again in two weeks.
Yeah, next weekend.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Not this Sunday, but the following
right.
Sunday. And then they meet again on the Sunday after that.
Yes.
So we'll see how that all pans out.
It
I enjoyed watching the game last night, as I know you did.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well.
Absolutely.
But last Sunday, we had some interesting stuff going on. It was Salute to Veterans Week in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned that Patriots long snapper Joe Cardona, who is in his 6th season, he's a lieutenant in the Naval Reserve. His dad, Patrick, served 24 years in the Navy. And he's the second Navy graduate to win multiple Super Bowls.
Oh.
Do you remember who the first one was? Oh, that look on your face. Come on.
Who was it?
Come on.
Who was it?
Come on. The Dodger himself, Roger Staubach.
I just wanted to hear you say it. Your
okay.
voice sounds better than me saying
I just thought I'd perplex you for a moment there. Yeah, Roger Staubach served 4 years in the Navy before he came back and played for the Cowboys. And he won 2 Super Bowls. And Joe Cardona is the only other one to have ever done that, won
wow.
2 Super Bowls with the Patriots. Bill Belichick, his dad Steve, was a World War II veteran. 33 years as a coach and a scout at the Naval Academy.
Oh, okay.
Thank you to these guys for their service.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of you for your service. If we haven't thanked you enough, thank you to every veteran and every active duty member of the armed services for your service. It makes it easy for slackers like us to sit around and talk about sports or
yes.
for me to play music and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, we couldn't say thank you enough, but we're going to try to.
We will.
Yes.
We will continue to do that at all times. Always. Anytime you see a veteran, it doesn't matter when it is, thank a veteran for their services. You
mm-hmm.
have absolutely no idea how much that means to them. Truly so. So let's go back to last Sunday as well, on
all
the
right.
8th of October. Tampa Bay and New Orleans.
Yikes.
New Orleans crushed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 38-3. Set a record in that game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers set a record. Losing 38-3. Worst defeat in Tom Brady's career. First three interception games since 2011 week three at the Bills. And the team set a record for the fewest running carries in history with only five running attempts. The previous record was six. And that fifth running attempt was a kneel down.
Yeah. So that tells you the kind of ground game they had.
They
going.
Ran the ball four times in the game with one kneel down to make five.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It's arguably the ugliest game of Tom Brady's professional career.
Yeah, it was the worst defeat in his career. Let's talk about the Ravens-Colts game from the previous weekend that the Ravens pulled off. It was the 31st straight time they had scored 20-plus points.
Yes.
And it was their first ever win versus the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
First time they've ever beat the Colts in their team history.
A battle of the Baltimore team and the former Baltimore team.
Exactly.
And the current Baltimore team had some struggles.
Yes.
And this Sunday.
Exactly.
Which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, without a
doubt. I mean, the fact that the Ravens, you think about the talent that's been on that team, from the Ray Lewis era to, Lamar Jackson era now. I mean, so much talent's gone in and out of that team that
they have never beat the
Colts. Yeah, I think they've never been able to beat the Colts.
Yeah, isn't that
wild? Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, without a doubt. And they're in the same division. Yeah, I mean, they're in different divisions, North versus the South.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to play them quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those matchups. Kind of like, I feel like the Chargers and Dolphins somehow always end up on each other's schedules.
Yep.
I feel like the same thing happens to the Ravens and the Colts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And one other little tidbit, in case you missed it, Andy Reid, with his win on the 8th of October, passed the legendary Curly Lambeau of the Green Bay Packers in the all-time win category.
There you go.
Andy Reid got his 230th all-time win to put himself in fifth place, passing Curly Lambeau, who had compiled 229 wins in his illustrious career.
Yeah, that's not a bad name to pass.
Without a doubt. Much as I'm a Raiders fan, you're a Chargers fan.
Yep.
We truly hate the Chiefs. I mean,
we
the
do.
Chiefs. But I do appreciate Andy Reid.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt good that he won his first Super Bowl, because now he's off the schneid.
I was going to say, he's more than deserved a ring
for
how good of
a
head coach he's been.
After all the years and all the great stuff he did in Philadelphia for the Eagles, and then on to Kansas City. And I don't think you or I have too much of a problem with the Chiefs winning their first Super Bowl in 50 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, they can go ahead and end that drought. That's fine.
Yeah.
Although, you can say that because your team's trophy case has some titles in it.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not so sure if I'm going to be as forgiving
since
that Chargers case has one runners-up plaque sitting in there gathering
exactly.
dust.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's look back at the great Stan Humphries.
The Super Bowl era has not been kind to the Chargers.
Let's look back at the great Stan Humphries and his complete and utter failure when Steve Young and the 49ers ran over the San Diego Chargers.
Not the worst loss, though, by an AFC West team to the Niners in the championship game.
That's true.
To Denver.
Yes, of course. Course, another team that both of us love to hate.
Yeah.
And that's who my Raiders are going to face Las Vegas this Sunday.
Have fun watching that game this weekend.
Oh, yeah,
I know how much you despise them.
Yeah. I can't wait.
It's going to be fun.
What do you call a bunch of millionaires sitting around watching the next Super Bowl? The Chiefs.
Oh my goodness.
I can't wait to watch. I'm hoping that you never know. It's
any
given Sunday, of course. But I'm counting on my Raiders to be able to pull off another win and extend their winning streak and be able to beat the Denver Broncos in Las Vegas at the very empty Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah, should be interesting.
But what I found interesting is that when we beat you guys in San Diego, it was the first time that the Raiders had met, in Los Angeles. Sorry, I keep on forgetting you now.
I wish they were still in San Diego.
You're now the Los Angeles Football Clippers.
Thank you for that.
I'm sorry, the Chargers.
I always got to
throw that one at you.
Oh, you always have to.
I always have. It's a game. But when we beat you guys in Los Angeles, the Las Vegas Raiders beating the Los Angeles Football Clippers, Chargers, at SoFi Stadium, first time the Raiders had met the Chargers, and you lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Your
debut against the Raiders in SoFi Stadium was futile.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. For...
Thanks to the drop on the very last play of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all fun and games.
I thought you guys had beaten us.
I did too.
I did too.
And then
replay
that,
never lies.
Yeah. And that one shot came up where you could see it just bobbling around next to his gut, and I just thought, that's it.
That's it. Isaiah Johnson did great defending those two big passes in the end zone, baby. Go Raiders!
He is the Sax Man, Rick Metz. Rick, as always, a pleasure to have you in here, my friend.
It's
have a great weekend.
My pleasure. The Sax Man's out of here. Down the road, Motors, baby.
We'll be back to wrap up the show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Thank you very much for joining me today. Big thank you to our pal Rick, our pal Terry for joining us on the phone. Hope you all enjoy the sports over the weekend. The second round of the Masters was suspended again, but currently four golfers top of the leaderboard at -9. Abraham Anser, Cameron Smith, Justin Thomas, and Dustin Johnson, your leaders at -9. But again, the second round has been suspended there at the Masters tournament. But enjoy the football over the weekend. Enjoy the racing if you're going to watch that. Enjoy the Masters if you're going to watch that over the weekend. But enjoy your weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. Peace.